Pros, just because something on the job runs out doesn't mean you have to. Order it on the Lowe's app. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members get free same-day delivery on eligible orders over $25. Get the fasteners, hardware, or tools you need to keep the job moving. Order by 2 p.m. and get eligible in-stock items delivered right to your job site by 8 p.m. Members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Subject to availability. Restrictions and terms at Lowe's.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumor Show. Happy New Year to everyone. I know we're like 15 days late, but it's been a long time since we've talked to you all, and a lot has happened since then. So we're just going to jump right into it. We've got three like little main topics today, but we're going to first start with CES 2026 because a few different things. One, obviously, it's the epicenter of, you know, the tech world for that week. Everyone from around the world comes into Vegas, including our own Hartley, for the first time in the United States, in Vegas specifically, not in the US, but Vegas, and your first CES. So I want to kick it off and ask you, how was your first time?
It was really interesting. It was very overwhelming. Vegas was a very overwhelming city with constant noise and just lights 24 hours a day. Very different on a very big scale. But it was an interesting place to be. As far as CES itself is concerned, what struck me was just the size of these conference halls and just how many of them there were. I mean, we did several long days on the floor, and it still wasn't enough to even see a quarter of what was there. If that, I mean, it would just be impossible to actually take the time to look at everything there. It's tens of thousands of people, and it must be thousands of different exhibitors taking over basically the whole city for the week.
Yeah, it's a lot. I don't even know the exact number, but I think my typical stretches I get in on Saturday night because typically Sunday and Monday, while not a official CES day, because those don't start until Tuesday to Friday. That's when the convention center opens. But for us in the media, there are tons of little micro events and exhibits and small conferences that happen throughout the week. And a lot of brands will pull us aside early before that. So we got to check out, I got to check out the Trifold and Samsung's new computers that are basically MacBook clones, which are really nice. I didn't even get a chance to talk about that because it was under embargo for another day. And then I got sidetracked with all the other stuff that I probably will do a full video on those soon. Hopefully we'll review one because these actually do look like legit MacBook competitors. And there's just so many things that I didn't even get to talk about, and it gets rolling pretty quickly. I don't know if that was the same experience for you, but I typically go Saturday to Thursday and I leave Thursday morning, but that really only gives me 2 days on the convention hall. But at that point, we've already seen so many other things that it's probably okay to leave on Thursday like I've been doing the last few years, although I might need to extend it to Friday and just give myself one more day on the showroom floor because there's just so much. But I do want to ask you, what was your most favorite and least favorite things that you saw? And I know there's a ton, so try to think about it as much as you can. But like, what was your favorite thing? We'll start with that first, that you saw at CES.
I mean, there were plenty of things that were quite cool. Sure. Lots of things like there was a lot made of robotics this year, humanoid robots in particular, and seeing the different ways in which they seem to be improving and seem to be just starting to be capable of some slightly more dexterous tasks. But in terms of an actual product that I could see myself buying and that is something that will be readily available, for me, it was the Clix Power keyboard, which we had quite a bit of time to take a look at. And that is because I can see it fitting quite well into my Apple ecosystem. So this is, rather than Qlik's other products, which have mainly been keyboard cases thus far, this is like a MagSafe keyboard that connects to the back of your iPhone, and it pops out as far as you would like it to. It's very tactile. It charges your iPhone through that MagSafe connection, and then you have a full mechanical keyboard. It's also backlit, and you compare it to other devices. So if you wanted to use it with your Apple TV, you can do that, and it can just sit right alongside your Apple TV remote on your coffee table, right next to your Apple TV, or maybe something like an iPad that you also might connect it to from time to time. And then you can charge your iPhone with it as well. So I think it's a pretty versatile product. I think that it's also quite accessible, because I think there are plenty of people who are maybe a little bit older who sometimes struggle to type quickly on their keyboard and are used to more tactile feedback. That could be really useful for those sorts of users. And if you're going to have some sort of MagSafe battery pack hanging around anyway, why not have one with a keyboard built in for those situations when you may want to use that? Another use case would be something like the Vision Pro, where it's really finicky to type on.
That's what I was going to say. This could be the most niche use case, but Vision Pro with the Qlik keyboard, like two things that most people don't, well, obviously you don't have the Qlik keyboard yet, but the Vision Pro as well. But that is super helpful. So if you are a Vision Pro owner and you just want to, like if you're sitting down on your couch and you got a little stand next to you that you can just keep that keyboard there for your Apple TV, your Vision Pro, whenever you want it on your phone. I will say, full disclosure, I've gotten to know the Qlik guys over the last few years. Michael Fisher, obviously a media colleague, friend of mine that I see at every event that we go to. So I'm biased in the sense that I want to see them succeed because they're just generally good people. And I like the ideas and the products that they're coming out with. But I will say I loved the idea of the original Qlik keyboard case, but I don't use a case on my phone. I didn't want to get trapped with a case on my phone. And I also didn't like how tall and uncomfortable it made the phone. And I think they realized that. A lot of people, while they liked the idea and all the cool things and shortcuts that you could do with the keyboard, it just kind of sucked in the sense that it made it super tall and just hard to pocket and everything. So this is a really good evolution of that product. Now it's something that you take your phone, like you said, pop it on there. It's MagSafe. You don't need to have it on all the time, because I wouldn't want it on all the time, but there will be certain scenarios where it makes it super useful. And the one thing I will comment on this new version, it's getting better with the spacing of the keys and how big the keys are, but I still would like to see a little bit more. I don't know if it was hard for you, but it's still a little bit hard for me to type on quickly and efficiently. But also, I admit, I've only had like an hour there, and we probably collectively spent like 10 minutes typing on it, not even. So that's kind of hard for me and unfair for me to say that it's difficult. But for me right now, I just need more time with it. But I could still probably say that I'm going to want the keys just to be a little bit bigger. That's a personal...
I know exactly what you mean by that. But I think it all depends on how you use it. So for me, would I use this to send a message? No. But if I was on a flight and all I had with me was my iPhone and I wanted to type something out that was a little bit longer, let's say I was writing an article for MacRumors on the go on my iPhone, freeing up that space on the screen is really where that becomes more valuable. And so even if the typing experience may in some respects be a little bit slower or a little bit worse than actually on the display, the freed up display area is where it starts to get useful. Or the fact that you can rotate the phone on the accessory and then get that wider view as well. So I think there's a lot of different ways to use it, which I think is why I like it. I think everyone is going to end up using this product slightly differently.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's the extra space. And by the way, it made me realize that the iPhone and Apple in general really needs to get their horizontal, you know, landscape orientation mode situated, because I wanted to turn it and use it, and a lot of apps just don't support it.
And it used to be there, right? With the iPhone 6 Plus, when that came out, Apple optimized almost all of its apps for that full landscape view. year by year, that has been stripped away.
They need to bring it back.
Which is a shame, especially considering that that was with a device that was, what, 5.5 inches?
Yeah.
And now we have these huge iPhones, and that isn't the case. Yeah. But maybe that will come with the foldable, which by virtue of its size, will have to be able to rotate.
Yeah. So I like that. They have a Clix communicator, which is basically an Android phone that is specifically optimized. You know, I actually thought those keys were a little bit better. There was more room and spaced apart a little bit better. But, you know, optimized for getting your messages. I think they were kind of saying they don't want it to compete with an iPhone. They totally understand that. But kind of more of like a secondary work device where all of your, you know, communicating, obviously the communicator is the name, you know, Slack and WhatsApp and messages and emails, like whatever you use to communicate for your business needs or personal needs, that's kind of what they wanted to target it as. So that'll be interesting to see. Hey guys, just want to take a quick minute to let you know about today's sponsor, SelectQuote. If you're like me, instead of learning to skateboard, maybe you wish you were learning to write code. Or instead of scraping through college, you wish you might have bought Bitcoin at less than a cent or secured a few Nvidia shares before they boomed. We might be the FOMO generation, but don't miss out on protecting your future. For around the same price per month as one of our streaming services, you can break our generational cycle and secure yours and your family's future by finding life insurance at SelectQuote.com. SelectQuote takes the guesswork out of finding the right life insurance policy, so you don't have to sort through dozens of confusing options on your own. Instead, one of their licensed agents will find the right policy at the right price for you, comparing plans from trusted, top-rated insurance companies to find a policy that fits your health, your lifestyle, and your budget. And they work for you for free. You'll be covered faster than you think. SelectQuote works with providers who offer same-day coverage up to $2 million worth with no medical exam required. Life insurance is never cheaper than it is today. Get the right life insurance for you for less and save more than 50% at SelectQuote.com/MacRumors. Save more than 50% on term life insurance at SelectQuote.com/MacRumors today to get started. That's SelectQuote.com/MacRumors. What was your least favorite thing that you saw?
It's not a specific thing. It's just the theme, really, which is just AI.
That was mine too.
I mean, I love AI, and it is so impressive and is changing the way that a lot of us complete day-to-day tasks and is streamlining a lot of things. It's making a lot of new things possible. I don't think any of us really underestimate that, but I feel like the problem is that because it's such a buzzword that investors and consumers are looking for, a lot of brands are just finding any way to call anything AI. Mm-hmm. I mean, I wouldn't say that every booth that we saw had some product related to AI, but I mean, it's got to be over 50% of them. Even where you had like accessory brands that somehow seem to be saying that, I've just got an Amazon delivery.
Oh, well, let me continue on with what Hartley was saying while he goes to get his Amazon delivery. I agree with that sentiment. That was my least favorite, thing at the entire conference, because everything was either a humanoid robot or an AI specific thing. I feel like brands just throw AI into literally anything they can. You know, a smart plug, when you plug it in, it uses AI to determine, like, okay, that's fine. Some of it's cool, some of it's useful. A lot of it is just slop that I didn't need in my life. So totally understand that. Let's see if it was anything good. Hartley, did you get anything good? I kept it going while you were doing your thing.
It was just books, which is the most boring classic Amazon purchase.
I know you could hear me through there. So what I was saying, basically, in case you didn't hear me, was that I agree with you. Everything was just AI slop from these brands that didn't have any business calling their product AI. And it's really obnoxious. But there are some things where, like you said, it's super useful. But I was sick of that and the humanoid robots. They just creeped me out. There was way too many of them. And I don't understand the function or purpose of them. So that was my whole thing. You good?
Yeah, I just lost audio for a sec. I didn't hear anything you just said.
You're good. Okay. Well, it doesn't matter. We'll just pretend like you heard.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. You're a little laggy, but that's fine.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. My connection's a little strained right here. Sorry, you might have cut this.
Yeah, I'll cut that part. Okay. And real quick, my favorite thing was, I mean, there was a few. I really am interested in the displaced TV. I saw it last year, and that's the completely wireless TV. And before you say anything, if you check it out, yes, there are images with a wire connected. That's just to keep the battery charged while they're there for hours on end to show you this TV. Like at CES, they have it plugged in because it's going to die eventually for how much they're using it. But it is a completely wireless TV. It mounts in seconds via a suctioning system. It's crazy. I loved it last year. They have a new one this year. They also have a mount that they sell without a TV so that you can bring your own TV to it. Make it wireless because it can plug into the battery pack that's on the mount. That was really, really cool. I liked it. It's just, I looked at the price afterwards. Holy cow. I guess I forgot what it was last year. It's like $6,000 for their 65-inch TV. That's absurd because the TV is really nice. It's a nice OLED panel, but it's, I know the tech and everything behind it is what they're valuing. I would just say buy the mount and bring your own TV to it. I also don't know how much the mount is, so let me reserve the right to change that if the mount is absurdly expensive. But I would maybe pay $500 for a mount that would make it, you know, wireless and give you the ability to bring it anywhere and suction it. Maybe a little more, because I think that tech is valuable. Is it $4,500 worth and then a $1,500 panel? No. But that's just my opinion. But I still think it's really cool. And then there was the, I'm not going to bore anyone with this because I don't know, it's super niche, but the Strata thing that OWC invented.
I also thought that was incredibly impressive.
Yeah, OWC invested in this company. I still don't fully understand the ins and outs of it, but basically it's the ability to access your computer in real time and pull files and data and stream things without using internet connection, but the power of Apple Silicon if you're using an Apple Silicon Mac. I don't even know the restrictions, but it's using your computer to make this happen. And so they demoed it for us, and they had a Mac that was in California, I think, and they had a live stream of that Mac so that you can verify, you know, the time. It was the exact time since we were on the same time zone. I mean, I guess they could have had that anywhere. I don't know how I'm supposed to, but I'm going to take their word for it. And they had files connected to a NAS that was connected to that. So even if it's not a drive that's on your Mac, but at least connected to your Mac, it's still able to do it. And they were pulling files in real time, playing it on a mobile phone on their Mac that they had there. And it was insane. There was no buffering, no lag, nothing. And then they pulled it into a Final Cut Pro timeline, was able to edit. It was wild. And it's kind of the thing that I need for my workflow because, you know, we try to get some third party, you know, companies that help us edit, or if we have somebody that needs to pull information from my machines, like I can give them access to specific drives and folders like you would in cloud storage, but they don't need to download anything. And so I've been messing around with that a little bit more now that I've been home, and I really thought it was pretty cool. But yeah, there's tons of other stuff. I just can't really think of anything, but you can check out my videos that I made. I made like 3 or 4. Yeah, that was CES 2026. We'll have to run it back again next year, Hartley. Now that you know what's going on and you are familiar with Vegas, bring some extra cash so we can gamble.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I won't lose $50 in a single spin.
Oh, we don't need to talk about that. Just make sure, boys and girls, when you go to Vegas, you understand fully how much your max bets are. And you don't just take the word for it of somebody who also doesn't gamble. Tells you, just go ahead and hit max. One spin was $50. That was insane. Anyways, moving on. We had some news this week. We had two big Apple-related things this week. And one of them is near and dear to my heart. The other one is, you know, AI-related, which is also, I guess, near and dear because I would like this to come out soon. But we'll start with the Apple Creator Studio. So basically, Apple decided to go full Adobe and bundle all of its creative and work apps into one suite for a monthly subscription price. Now, before everybody freaks out, if you're a Final Cut Pro Final Cut Pros are a Final Cut Pro user or a Logic Pro user. A lot of these apps still remain either free, like the work apps, Keynote, Pages, Numbers, those are still free. But a lot of the new AI features that have come with this bundle, you'll have to pay for if you want them. But the stuff that you're still using now is still free. Final Cut Pro, if you are a one-time purchase owner, that still works totally fine. I'm still unclear as to whether or not you actually get updates that include these new features or not. I don't totally understand. Do you have any insight into that, Hartley?
We don't know everything yet, and it looks like the picture will evolve. So there are several features that have been outlined that are largely features that use AI in some way or are considered to be sort of next generation features one way or another that will be reserved specifically for the subscription version of the apps. But in terms of the core feature set and the feature set as it has existed before this announcement, you will still get that in its entirety. And Apple says that it will continue to update that version of the app. So if there are new core features, those I imagine will continue to come to both versions of the app. It's more so if there are these additional features, AI features, that will be exclusive to the subscription, which I have thoughts on.
What do you have thoughts on specifically? The subscription, the AI thoughts, both?
It's the model of this. So I think that what's good about it, I think that the idea of bundling creative apps in a monthly subscription is per se a good idea.
Especially at this price point, by the way, because it is very affordable.
And that is across in for at least three of those apps with Final Cut, Logic, and Pixelmator. Also on the iPad with Pixelmator coming to the iPad for the, or Pixelmator Pro rather, coming to the iPad for the first time. I think that's a reasonable cost for that. And there is also a package available for students where it drops to just $2.99 a month. And if you are a student who is interested in music production or filmmaking, that's really accessible. And I think makes a lot more sense and is a lot more palatable than this big outright purchase. But nevertheless, something doesn't sit right with me here, which is that it's not entirely clear what the difference will be with the subscription version of the apps and the outright purchase. And inevitably, those people who just until a few days ago will have bought any of these individual apps for hundreds of dollars is now going to feel a little bit left out and feel like they have an inferior product. And it is to some extent going to be left behind. Is it the case that Apple is going to bring features that have been out for a year on the subscription version to the one-time purchase? I doubt it. And I imagine that in 10 years' time, there will be no outright purchase option and these apps will only exist as subscriptions, which is a shame. I understand the strategy, but then there are other problems here, which are that why, if I want the best experience with the iWork apps, which I actually do use quite regularly, I don't really like Excel, so I use Numbers for all of my personal finances and other sort of spreadsheets like that. I do use Pages for things like invoicing as well. So I do use those apps. I don't use Keynote so much anymore. But if I want the best and full experience with those apps, I now have to pay for Main Stage and other stuff that I'm not going to use. And Apple could argue that, well, you don't have to use those and you're just paying for whatever you use. But before today, I didn't even have to think about paying for features in Numbers. At that point, maybe I should go and use Excel or a Microsoft app. And ultimately, Numbers is not as strong as something like Excel. So already it was at a little bit of a disadvantage and not as powerful. And now if I want to unlock that full feature set, I've got to pay. And Apple seems to have sort of tried very carefully to position this to suggest that those users who are not paying are not going to be left behind. But I think there's been a little bit of a failure of PR here because it doesn't feel like that to me. I do feel like as someone who has the one-time purchase versions of Final Cut and Logic, and Pixelmator, and also obviously I do use the iWork apps, I do worry now a little bit about, well, what's going to happen to the features that I was expecting to receive?
So here's my counter argument to it. Excel subscription for Microsoft 365, which gives you Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, that is $9.99 a month, which is slightly cheaper than what you're paying to get the, you know, but I don't even know if there is a, free web-only version. So you can get a free version, but you got to use it on the web, and web apps, maybe you don't like that, whatever. I'd argue that if you are already comfortable with what you have in your free versions, you don't need to pay for it because it is just AI. I know you're like, well, what if I find those other ones useful? Well, then you're going to have to make a decision. But my thought process here is, it sucks. Everybody's moving to subscription prices. It is what it is. So I'm just kind of moving that out of the picture, unfortunately. You can still use these free versions. I feel like you're going to get more value before switching to Excel from the free versions, just because you have actual apps that are across your entire ecosystem immediately installed. So you got those, which is nice. And you're then, not to mention with Microsoft, it seems like you're just getting Excel, Word, and PowerPoint, and that's it. Whereas, you know, maybe you don't need Main Stage and Compressor and Motion and Logic and Final Cut and Pixelmator Pro. But think about the ability of those apps and what you're getting for that same price. I know you don't need it, but maybe one day you might. Maybe you have a kid that might get into something like that. And now you have this, the full family plan for a very reasonable price. So I don't know.
I think that's a fair argument. I think for me, it's just the problem with how this has been presented. I think that Apple said, right, we're going to split Logic out into two different apps. You're going to have Logic and Logic Pro. Logic Pro is now the subscription version of the app, and Logic is a more basic version of the app that is as it stands today and will continue to be updated and continue to work, but it will not receive brand new features. Not really. Occasionally, we will trickle something down as appropriate, but if you've bought Logic, you are buying it as it was today. And then there is this different version of the app. But I feel like Apple's kind of been reluctant to do that. And in being a little bit too cautious has actually complicated the picture here and made things feel a little bit more complicated and a little bit more unjust than it needed to have been, considering that these apps were very expensive. People have been very used to the way that these things have worked for a very long time. Let's say that you were someone who was paying the subscription price for Logic for iPad, and you had paid the one-off price for Logic for the Mac. Well, now, in order to continue accessing Logic for the iPad, you need to have the subscription anyway.
Wait, what do you mean? So I do have clarification. I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to say. I believe it's public knowledge that you can still access the separate subscriptions for the ones on the iPad. You do not need to do the full bundle.
Right.
So is that fair? I don't know if I need to cut this.
Yeah, that was, you know, that was
okay.
I think that makes sense, and that's a good thing. But then that just brings me to another problem, which is if you discontinue this subscription, you can't even like open a project. Which,
sure. Yeah, that's annoying.
I think that it just the whole I think per se, As I said at the start, bundling everything together in a subscription and moving in that direction is not a bad thing. And I think it will encourage Apple to offer a little bit more with these apps and level them up where it has felt like they've become a little bit neglected. Even something like the iWork suite has definitely been a little bit neglected over the past decade. And I would happily pay to access a richer feature set and have these apps scale up to be a little bit more competitive. But the way this has been positioned this week, I do feel like has been a bit of a mess. I mean, there has even been backlash about the icons. People seem pretty upset about the way these icons look, and they've kind of lost all of their character and their sense of fun. And they don't even really sort of embody the best of Liquid Glass. It's just a super simplified version of these icons that again feels like a bit of a regression. And I feel like what Apple maybe would have done 15 years ago or 20 years ago would have been to take on this move a little bit more directly and said, we want to move to a subscription model because we think this is going to deliver more development resources to keep these apps at the cutting edge going forward, and we'll support them more widely across the industry. But in order to do that, there are going to be some difficult decisions that have to be made, but we will treat our existing customers fairly and we will make things very clear. I don't think this has been clear at all. I think that even a lot of us who have been covering this week have been kind of scratching our heads and trying to get to the bottom of, well, is this included or how does that work? And that's felt very confusing. And I'm not sure that Apple would have done that 20 years ago.
Yeah, it is a little confusing. I will say that you can fully expect all of the one-time purchases and other subscriptions that are not this bundle to go away in the future, like completely. That's not information that I have. That's just my opinion. But I obviously see that this is going to trend towards being that. If you look it up towards Adobe, obviously it's a significantly better deal in terms of like, okay, here are the apps that you're getting and here's the price. But you could make the argument that, I don't know how much Adobe Suite is fully, but I think it's like $50 to $60 a month, which I was paying for a while and I don't even use, but now I have some sort of free, they gave it to me for a year for media. There are tons of apps in there. And sometimes I do like to go back and forth and play around. Do I need all of that stuff? No. A lot of those apps are also fully more capable of doing different things that you can't, like from a Final Cut Pro user, right? Adobe Premiere is still a lot further ahead, especially with the AI features that are actually useful. Just the whole suite can do a lot more compared to what Apple can do. And for years, Final Cut Pro and Logic Pro have been neglected and just don't seem to get updates as frequently. It's been getting better, but my hope is that I'll gladly pay for a subscription if this means you're going to finally take it seriously and like realize that there is a huge fan base out there of users that use this for professional work on a daily basis and would like for you to keep it in line with the rest of the competitors. Stop promoting Black Magic whenever you're talking about video production because you think their app is far more superior and you don't even use Final Cut. They have other, you know, there's so many great features on these other platforms that you could also implement into yours. So hopefully that is something that happens. And there are new features that we didn't even get a chance to talk about. I don't know all of them off the top of my head, but, you know, from specific standpoint with Final Cut, one that stands out to me is visual search and text search. So if you're looking for a clip specifically and you know, visually it was a guitar or a microphone or something, it'll pull up all of those clips immediately of your B-roll that fit that. And it seems to look like it'll work pretty well, which is great. There are some plugins that I've used in the past that are really expensive to add on. So it's nice that this will be built in. And then if you remember saying something like in our podcast, when I'm editing this, it'll be great to be able to then go and be like, oh, I remember, you know, the train came through and I got to cut that out because we don't want people to hear the loud noise. If I say the word train, I could immediately type that in, find that. I don't have to go in and mark the timestamps like I've been doing and cut that out, which is really helpful. So super excited about that kind of stuff. I believe there's like an AI feature that'll recognize the beats and, you know, the perfect cut points for cutting the music. That'll be really helpful. I don't particularly do that very often, but there will be times where that will be helpful. And there are other, you know, features in Logic and all that is using AI. I keep saying this. And so hopefully they are able to implement a lot more and will update this a lot more frequently. I don't know what that means for the one-time users. Maybe you will get this and then you'll just slowly stop getting updates and then eventually you'll just get phased out and told that you need to move over. Or maybe you'll get updates that are not new features like the AI stuff, but you'll get the rest of the upgrades, the bug fixes, maybe some new features that aren't leveraging AI. This kind of seems like that's what they're doing. They're just separating AI features from non and saying that's where the premium, you know, bundle subscription comes from. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this all works. And Pixelmator Pro on the iPad seems really nice. I am curious as to why Photomator has been left in the dust. Apple purchased the whole thing, you know, the whole company. My thought process is that they're going to take Photomator's features and just put that into the main Photos app and introduce that this year during WWDC. What do you think about that?
I think that would make sense. In a way, I would like Apple to keep it separate. Okay. I think that there is something to be said for having consumer and pro versions of apps like GarageBand and Logic. I think GarageBand is very accessible, or something like iMovie and Final Cut. I don't know that merging Photomator with the Photos app is the best outcome. I mean, I'd be happy for it to happen because Photomator is some good machine learning tools in there, such as I think there's one called Super Resolution that increases the resolution of photos, and it actually works very well. Things like that would be good to have in the Photos app as opposed to not having them at all. But personally, I would like to see Photomator become a little bit like what Aperture was, and be the more powerful tool for photographers. But maybe Apple's just starting out with Pixelmator Pro here, and then will eventually do the same with Photomator.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it would be nice to kind of keep them separate. You know, they could do a Photos Pro or Photos Plus app. I don't know. That would be stupid. But or maybe it's just not ready and they'll add it into the bundle soon. Who knows? But yeah, I thought it was a little suspicious. You know, they bought both Photomator and Pixelmator, and only Pixelmator made it to this bundle. So, you know, I'm surprised they didn't rename it either.
I suppose, but sometimes when Apple acquires something, it doesn't change the name. I mean, take Siri, for example. Apple did not come up with the name Siri. Apple bought that company and kept the name the same. And if I remember right, and this might be totally wrong, but it was before my time, I believe Final Cut was the same, or Logic, or one of them, or both of them. That they were also acquisitions and retained their original names. So I guess that would fit, especially if these are tools that are used by creatives and they're quite well-established and trusted names in their own right. I guess Apple doesn't see a need to change it.
Yeah, I mean, makes sense. So moving on to the last portion of our show here, and we'll just quickly touch on this, but Apple has confirmed that Gemini will be powering the next version of Siri. So, I mean, we kind of talked about this a lot in the past of like, you know, at some point I kind of just assumed Apple would have purchased like Perplexity, or, you know, I don't know how big Anthropic's the main company that makes Claude. I don't know how much that would have cost to purchase them, but like those types of AI apps would have been ones that I thought, you know, OpenAI is way too big of a company now. They would have had to have done this a long time ago. You know, I just figured one of those companies would have been purchased and implemented the tech into Siri and would have just used that. But they did not do that. And so now with the whole delay that we experienced, what, last year or 2 years ago when Apple introduced the next gen version of Siri and Apple Intelligence, I believe that was 2024 now. It's right, already been approaching 2 years. And we didn't get it last year in 2025. We're supposed to get it now this year in early, like soon, within the next couple of months, in 26.4, I believe. We should be getting the next gen features, but now we have a joint statement. I'll read it to you really quickly. After careful evaluation, we determined that Google's technology provides the most capable foundation for Apple Foundation models, and we're excited about the innovative new experiences it will unlock for our users. And they will combine Siri and Gemini in some way, and it will not be Google getting your data. Apple is very clear on this, that it is still using private cloud compute, so it's not accessing, or Google will not be accessing any of your data, and it'll be processed on device. And whenever it does reach out to the cloud, it will use Apple's servers for that. So you can rest assured that Google probably already has your data. I feel like most people listening to this have used Google services. So that stuff just blows my mind where they're like, good, I don't want them to have my... They have your information. But I guess if you don't want to give them more, this is nice. Just your thoughts on Google Gemini being the one that's going to be powering next-gen Siri.
I think it makes sense. The reason why I don't think Apple made one of those acquisitions is because those AI models, or rather those large language models specifically, are not anywhere near as powerful or as versatile as Gemini. And Apple did have its own models that it was building. It still has them. It's still working on them as far as we're aware. So if Apple has a model that is not particularly capable compared to Gemini, purchasing another model that is not as capable as Gemini, and even if it's slightly better than its own model, is not a, it doesn't go far enough to delivering what it wants to deliver and delivering a good experience. So I think the only way that it could do this was buying an external model from either OpenAI or from Google to be able to do this. And Ming-Chi Kuo, who's a very reputable analyst when it comes to Apple rumors and what the company is doing, explained this week that this is not a permanent solution. This is not what Apple wants to do indefinitely. This is a way of it trying to catch up. It is still working on its own models. It still wants to have full control eventually, but this is what it needs to do for now. And the way that Apple Intelligence has been built is that some things are being done by its foundation models, some things are being done on device, some things are being sent to private cloud compute. The things that are being done in private cloud compute are not all Gemini, because they exist right now. If you ask a query to an Apple Intelligence service, maybe something like in writing tools that is too complicated to do on device, it will go to private cloud compute. That feature exists today. So plugging Gemini into that system enables the existing framework to get a lot more powerful, while also enabling Apple, as its own models improve, for it to slowly move over and lean on those. But it does sound like the partnership is pretty deep. It's going to go beyond Siri. We had another report from The Information this week that said at WWDC this year, Apple's planning to announce new features that will be supported by Gemini in Apple Intelligence, which will include knowledge of past conversations. So when you talk to Siri, it will have that awareness that we've come to expect from other services about what you may have discussed in the past, and also suggestions. So this was something that was a little bit absent when Apple Intelligence was first proposed, that we didn't really see very many suggestions across like widgets and the app library and search. It looks like that is one of the things that Apple is going to announce this year, supported by Gemini. So it's, I think it's a good thing for users. It's a little bit embarrassing for Apple, because there is no way that they knew that they were doing this when they announced those features. And when we heard rumors about this months ago, Apple was still on the fence about who it was going to partner with, if it even needed to partner with someone. This all seems to have been very late stage, very delayed, and that is a little bit embarrassing. But hopefully it will be good, and it will work well. And I'm pretty excited to try it out. It's almost been so long that I almost can't really imagine now how this is going to fit in, and will this replace ChatGPT and Gemini for me, or is this going to do something completely different?
Well, here's my concern too, is for one, is Apple going to replace ChatGPT in general? Because right now that's what it's reaching out to when it can't handle, I'm guessing so, right? That is, this partnership pretty much gone?
My understanding with that partnership is that the companies are not paying each other for that. So ChatGPT has the advantage of getting user data from iPhones and having that brand visibility that it has gained. But Apple, on the other hand, has been able to rush out ostensibly a Siri that can answer more questions. This is different with Gemini.
Well, when you give it permission.
Yeah, this is different with Gemini, because they are paying $1 billion to be able to license this.
Right.
So probably you are right that integration will fade away. What I think is more likely to happen is that you will be presented with options in settings, whether you want those queries to go directly to Gemini or directly to ChatGPT.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I'm a ChatGPT user, but I will fully switch, obviously, if this is something that, well, for one, it's, you know, obviously it's not going to be collecting my data via OpenAI, and it won't have to ask you anymore if you give it permission, because it is using private cloud compute. So that's not a thing that you need to worry about. So it'll just be more of a seamless one-to-one integration, in my opinion. So, or at least that's what I think.
I don't think it will be seamless. I think that
you don't.
what will work on private cloud compute is Apple's implementation of the Gemini LLM models. So that will power things like if you ask Siri to tell you a story or a joke or to comprehend something complicated, it will run that in Gemini effectively. Or if you ask it, an emotional question, or you wanted to create a document, that is what it will use Gemini for. But I don't think that's going to be hooked up to the web. So if you wanted to ask it about sports scores, it's still going to have to go through the fully fledged version of Gemini that is connected to the internet and is capable of search. And a lot of the ways that we use chatbots when it comes to things like image generation or uploading a PDF or creating large quantities of data that we can import or export or coding, that will all still have to be done in the chatbot version of Gemini. And if you want to access that with your history that you have in Gemini or you have in ChatGPT, then you're going to need to sign into your account and use that version. So while I think we probably will get the response from Siri a lot less that it is asking ChatGPT when we get that little banner that drops down, I still think you'll probably get it, at least for the next year.
Apple should give you the ability to remove that. You just give it a one time, yeah, I allow this for everything. Because think about that. Most of us, if we ask Siri and it needs to resort to an outside thing, and you say no, then what's your next step? Wouldn't it just be to Google it? So what is the difference? I mean, I guess if you're using Google signed out, but I
also think it's a reliability thing.
So it's like,
that's why you get that rather annoying response from Siri that says, check important info for mistakes. I've heard that 1,000 times now, and it kind of drives me crazy every time I hear it because I'm anticipating it saying it. But I think Apple just doesn't want Siri to say something that is inaccurate.
Ridiculous.
I mean, yeah. I don't actually care if it's inaccurate because I'm asking an AI service. So I do have a margin of error. I am anticipating something might be wrong. I'm not going to ask it for like urgent medical advice and then take what it says verbatim because I'm aware that it can hallucinate. There can be inaccuracies. But if I'm asking it a fairly simple question about the Amazon books I just had delivered and you know what the plot is, I don't need you to tell me that mm-hmm. might be inaccurate. That's just really annoying.
Yeah. I also think, you know, obviously this is going to go beyond just like finding out answers to things, but personal context and knowing more about you and helping you be able to book flights or whatever the case may be, you know, knowing, pulling information, all the stuff that Apple told us we were going to get and then we didn't get, this should also help with that. I'm curious though, how is this going to be, like how long have they been doing this and how is this supposed to be ready to launch in the next 2 months? Or are we going to expect that to just be, you know, done for? Or we're going to get another delay? I know they said already that some features will be delayed until the 20th.
I think we will get it. I think after this much time and this much delay, Apple can't delay anymore and it will have to debut this updated version of Siri. And I think that using Gemini has kind of enabled it to have that shortcut because it has something that is essentially a ready finished product that it can take out of the box and just launch with its own little modifications. And they've made it work on private cloud compute and it's going to work seamlessly through Siri and certain kinds of inquiries will be directed one way or another. That stuff is something that it can have developed fully in the space of a year. What I think will be noticeably absent is the full extent of the integrations as they were originally presented at WWDC. I've been saying this for a while. While I think that it will be entirely possible to get a rich answer about something in messages and calendar and reminders, I think that this being truly and fully and deeply integrated across the entire system is just not going to happen yet. Certainly, third-party developers are not really going to be able to support this unless through app intents, which a lot of the time are quite limited. So you might be able to tell it to I don't know, pull up something from Spotify using an app intent. But that isn't really the sort of full deep version of Apple Intelligence as we imagined it, with this full on-screen awareness and this rich understanding of being able to take multi-step actions within apps. I just don't think that's going to happen yet. I think that it will be fairly surface level. You can ask Siri, what was the message I received about the event taking place next week? And then it will tell you, and then you can say, oh, well, can you add that to my calendar and maybe add a reminder related to that? And it will be able to follow that kind of multi-step task. But anything much more complicated than that, I just don't think it's going to be able to do. That kind of workflow is enough that you or I will be pretty impressed by that for a few months and have something to talk about. And Apple can say that they've done a great job, and it will get us through to WWDC this year. But is that going to be quite as impressive as it was originally presented? I doubt it. And I think that version is probably still maybe a year out. And before this starts to get really quite impressive and Apple's own models start to step up, that could easily still be 2 years away.
Yeah, so I'm looking at this and realize that, you know, 26.4 is when we'll probably get what you were just saying, and we'll get some of those things. But then, you know, the report basically says that more additional Siri announcements will come at WWDC. So that's probably where the iOS 27 new features will come. And then, like you said, if we're going to get even more impressive, we're looking at another... God, that's so long. Wake me up when that happens, I guess. I'm already starting to turn it off. But we'll maintain positivity. I'm excited for 26.4. You know, it's not every day that an iterative update like that becomes pretty significant. So, you know, we got some new stuff coming, and a lot of new stuff coming throughout the year. You know, we just talked about CES. So if you're a fan of Apple and other, you know, accessory companies and things and other brands, there's going to be a lot of new tech this year. So check out all that stuff. And Creator Studio comes out on the 28th for $12.99 a month. Or if you're a student, it's $2.99 a month, which is wild. And then, yeah, the Siri stuff will be here in hopefully in March or April, whenever 26.4 comes. But we'll, you know, love to hear everybody's thoughts on this in the comments. Hit us up, emails, all that. And we'll catch everybody in next week's episode.